Hey, audio listeners of the Variant Cast, John Cena here. I wanted to drop by and let you know that this is a really great episode. The guys are talking about two of my favorite things, wrestling and my acting career. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Variant Cast. I have finally fought through the rare but definitely formidable maestro variant of COVID-19, and luckily came out alive. I can't taste anything anymore, and my taste for movies is completely gone, but that's okay, because we're just gonna be talking about some Zac Efron movies. So hopefully we can get through that. How are you doing today, Trent?
Doing good. Glad you got over it just in time to get the Jaw fan club back online.
Yeah, I think it was just a bit too much of the artsy foo-foo that I was watching. Really came down, really hit me hard. It took me like a week, so it was a little bit before I was able to get around to these movies, but we made it around to it, and we're going to be talking about Ironclaw first.
Hell yeah.
So Ironclaw, if you've been listening to this show, is almost mythical in the sense that we've been talking about this movie for a long time, basically since it was announced. You got Jeremy Allen White and the boy Zac Efron all together playing the Von Erichs, which is a famous wrestling family. Anybody that is, you know, faintly familiar with professional wrestling knows the Von Erichs. Especially if you followed it in the 80s and 90s as they basically ran it. But this story they tell is a sad one, as the story of the Von Erichs is a sad one.
Yeah.
And one filled with tragedies. But let's just go big picture thoughts here. What did you think about the movie, Trent?
Well, I loved it. I had no idea about the story before going into it. I had heard the name, but didn't know any of the story behind their family. So as the story was unraveling, it definitely was like shocking how what went on. And I thought that all the performances were fantastic in it, and I really enjoyed it, even though how devastating it is, because it is a really sad movie.
It's definitely one that just tests you, in the sense that bad things just keep happening over and over again, and they never get better.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of the way it is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But there are some great performances along the way. Obviously, the boy Jeremy Allen White comes in playing Kerry, who is basically the youngest of the brothers. And he gets, you know, this pretty interesting arc of just kind of showing up. I think he kind of exemplates, that wasn't even a word, the pressures that the family was put under. So like, the father basically comes out and is like, hey, you're gonna start wrestling.
Yeah.
It's like, okay,
the Olympics are taken from you, just like American football is taken from me.
It's like, all right, I guess.
Yeah.
At no point does he ever seem like he's that into it, and I think that's kind of what they're trying to convey.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing it so that he's, you know, can make his dad proud, as all the boys are.
And, yeah,
dad's kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah, the dad's definitely a piece of work. The way that he just like always just tells him, "Oh, you guys gotta figure it out amongst yourselves," like. Just like, yeah, it's so frustrating. And it got to the point in the movie where it was just like, it felt like he should have been doing something, but like he wasn't. And Zac Efron's character is like, you know, the through point of like the audience saying like, you know, why is this like you have to do something, like, or not necessarily that, but you know, he's saying like we have to stop this curse somehow from happening. And there's some very obvious things that they could have done to to stop it. Obviously not like how David went out, but like felt like towards the end, some of those were like, you should have been able to stop it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even David's, like, if there was just a bit more care put on like health,
yeah,
that one could have been stopped. Hey, but like, because he felt the pressure from his father, he knew he had to go.
Yeah.
He had to go try to wrestle that match when he clearly was not doing well. And, it's a tough one. Kevin obviously, got to go through pretty much everything, in terms of, I think he's the only kid that we see at the beginning of the movie that actually, you know, stays alive, because Jack Jr., he unfortunately passes away at 5. Not really discussed how that happened.
Yeah.
But it all lays into this curse, which the curse kind of just seems to be not taking care of your body, is the curse, I guess, because very much a lot of these could have just been prevented with, you know, care that wasn't really there in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
At the time, it's always been in this weird in between where it's not quite seen as sport and it's not quite seen as performance. So it kind of just got none of the benefits from that.
Yeah.
And like, you know, when you have athletes putting their body on the line like this, it absolutely became a question of recovery. And like, it's so strange because probably the only other sport that takes this amount of just physical toll on the body would be like mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
Just because like you're not taking these kinds of hits anywhere else. But with MMA, they fight generally about, you know, once every 2 to 3 months. Wrestling, there are no days off. It's generally like at least 2 or 3 shows a week. So they're performing more than like tackle football. If you're not taking care of your body, it will absolutely destroy you. And luckily, I think as we've gotten into a more modern age of wrestling, that has, you know, been found out.
Yeah.
So we don't have these tragedies anymore. But this stuff was extremely common. Obviously, there's the tragedy of like Chris Benoit and what these type of like repeated head injuries did. And we got to see a bit of that with Mike, who never seemed like he wanted to wrestle at all.
No. Yeah. It was really like messed up when they were all up on the stage and he's like, all of my kids are going to be up here and have the belt. Even Mike. And it was like, and Mike was just like scrawny at the time. And he was just like, I'm just like playing music,
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. No, he definitely showed he wanted to be a musician, and unfortunately, he never got that opportunity. Real tragedy there.
Yeah.
And just overall, like the emotion you feel for a lot of these characters that you really don't get a lot of time with.
Yeah.
But they still are able to bring it out. Really, really well done by the entire cast there.
Yeah. The best scene of the entire movie is probably like the montage when Carrie first starts fighting. And Tom Sawyer's playing, and there's like the whole montage of them fighting together and then them like building up through the ranks. Like that scene got me so hyped. And then the rest of the movie's just downfall.
Yeah.
So,
there's not many moments like that. There's not really many feel good times in these movies. And for every one, there's two sad moments, but
yeah,
you don't finish the movie feeling hopeless, which I think was the goal here.
Yeah.
You come out feeling like there's some hope for some reason, even though there shouldn't be.
Yeah, no. In the final scene definitely like solidified Zac Efron as a great actor in my mind. The scene when he's at his ranch with his kids, and that scene and the scene with Carrie on the boat were both just like, I thought just like just a beautiful finish to the movie.
Yeah, those are back to back, and they get you in the feels. And I think you're right. I think Zac Efron has kind of, especially with this, but he's been doing it for a minute now. Mm-hmm. He's obviously shed the High School Musical, and he's now kind of shedding the Baywatch era.
Yeah.
It's been, you know, just evolution after evolution for him. And while he's always kind of the hot guy typecast, I think he's really stepping out of that and doing a good job in the kind of everyman leading man type of role that it seems like he's in all the time, including in the next movie that we watched.
Yep. Ricky Stenicki.
Ricky Stenicki.
Yeah. I kept calling it Ricky Stanicki the whole in the previous episodes, but now we know that it's Ricky Stenicki. But
I do think Ricky Stanicki flows a bit better, but Ricky Stenicki is definitely sounds more like a made up name, which I think we're going for.
No, yeah, definitely. I thought it was really funny. It obviously, you know, not the greatest movie of all time, but I do like the premise a lot, and the leading cast I found really fun. I really like Andrew Santino. He's really funny, and him with Jermaine Fowler and Zac Efron and John Cena. Like I just thought that it was really good chemistry on screen.
Yeah, no, they actually did feel like a group of friends, which is always the biggest issue when casting, like just a group of friends. It's hard to make that seem genuine because friend groups have so many dynamics, and everybody generally has had one, so it's easy to see when something isn't genuine.
Yeah.
But I you know, this is a movie where it's like, it's not amazing by any means, but if you're someone that just like wants to watch a comedy, you're not gonna be upset at it. Yeah. Does all the humor land for me? Generally not. I think that would be my biggest problem with this movie, is I just didn't find it funny at most points. I think like everything he's in, John Cena steals the show again. But he's given these masturbation jokes, and I don't know, it kind of just, you're putting him in a box when you say that, you know, half of his humor is just masturbation jokes. I think you're really limiting what Cena can do, and what a lot of these guys can do. I think, like, Andrew Santino of Dave fame, who is now kind of broken into the movie consciousness here, I think he is so much better than the stuff that he gets in this, and he's really supposed to be the straight man.
Yeah,
but there's not enough for him to be the straight man too. I just didn't quite hit with most of the jokes for me, and I think that would be the biggest thing to bring it down. But like, honestly, everything's there for a good comedy, and if the jokes land for you, I could see this being a absolute barn burner of a time.
Yeah. The director who made this is the same director who made like Dumb and Dumber and like movie, like I think it's called like Movie 47 or whatever. So that kind of makes sense with the type of
movie
comedy.
43.
Yeah, more movie 43. Yeah.
He was a producer on Movie 43. One of my least favorite movie. Yeah, I hate that movie. There's that humor in it for sure.
Yeah, but no, there is. Yeah, like you said, there isn't a lot of room for the people to play around with, I feel like. But like the moments where John Cena is like, you know, able to act, I felt like was like really good, especially the scene when the lady's talking about his like foundation or whatever that he's a part of. And then he has to sit there for like 10 seconds and kind of like think of an excuse in his head, and then turns back around and then like gives like a whole spiel about it. Like those were some of the best parts of the movie.
I agree. I think that would probably, if I was going to change one thing about it, I would, because it's kind of Zac Efron as the leading man here. He has this subplot about how he doesn't want to be a dad because of terrible things that happened in his past that he doesn't want to talk about. And
yeah,
that's his character arc. I think the movie would have been better if you kind of just demote him to a side character with the other three.
Mm-hmm.
And you just make it told from the point of view of John Cena or Ricky Stanicky or Rod or whatever.
Yeah.
And you just told it through that, because I think that's the most interesting part about this movie, is a guy that is an actor that gets pulled in for this role, but the role is so much better than his normal life that he abandons it and fully falls into this role. And I think that's the most interesting part about this movie, and it's not explored internally enough.
Yeah.
So if I could change one thing, it would be that. Granted, that's a huge narrative change, but I think you would have got a much better movie. And, you know, John Cena just continues to kill it in these comedies and pretty much everything he's in. So yeah. Shout out John Cena.
Yeah. The what really brings it down for me, too, is like there's so many like unrealistic scenarios that happen in it. Like there's like all those crimes that they committed when they were younger. I guess nobody cares to like indict them or anything anymore, like burning down, like almost burning down that house or whatever. Like, I guess once somebody, like I was expecting, you know, like the FBI to become a part of it, of like, oh, this Ricky Stanicky guy, like, you know, or not necessarily like the FBI, but the police, like, oh, there actually is somebody showing up with the name Ricky Stanicky, like better show up to, you know, like see if he's actually the same dude.
Wouldn't that be a better climax? Like, I feel like the climax of this movie is so needlessly complicated with him getting the job and then this weird merger. And the big liar reveal happens with a news conference, or not a new like a news segment that, like, it's a weirdly convoluted plot that, like, if you stop paying attention, you're gonna be like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. They set it up. All of the promotion is, hey, we made up this guy to cover for us and we blame him for everything we ever did wrong, and that's what the first scene establishes. And it kind of feels like, you know, that never got, you know, brought up again.
Yeah, but
they use this guy to commit literal crime. And no one cared. I guess it was just kids being kids. It was so long ago, but I think that would have been a more interesting kind of point, and have Cena's character kind of deal with the repercussions of that. Maybe after he's changed his name, you know, there's something that, I don't know.
Yeah.
Guess not.
And like him, like expediting a new, like changing his name to that, like, and like within a day, like that just all seemed super, like, I know it's a movie, but
yeah.
But no, those, like, the kind of things are like, yeah, like take me out of it.
why didn't he just say it's a fake ID? Why did they say he overnighted it? Have you ever been able to overnight anything from the US government? That's not a thing.
Yeah.
So overall, it's worth a watch if you're, you know, wanting a comedy, if you've enjoyed Cena performances, if you just want to watch something with your Prime Video account, you know?
Yeah, if it's just sitting there collecting dust.
And while you wait for Invincible Season 2.
Yep.
Which finally came to our Prime Video feed, which we were all patiently refreshing. I know I do on my you know, free time, just seeing what Prime Video is going to put out. And this week it was the return, the long-awaited return of a series that is taking way too long to finish its second season, but man, is it high quality.
Yeah. No, the writing is top notch. I feel like, yeah, the series is really picking up. I mean, picking up story wise, not necessarily yeah. release date wise, but no, the story seems to be, you know, going places. And the ending of this episode was shocking.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, let's just get into it. We'll do a little recap, for the next, I think it's going to be 4 weeks. We'll yeah. be getting an episode of Invincible, and these things really are, pretty much movies each episode. So like, I'm kind of okay with it because they're about an hour and they tell like a fairly cohesive story start to finish. This one picks up right after the battle on the planet Thraxen with all the ant people, if you are confused what Thraxen is. Nolan has been taken by the Viltrumites, and there is this, you know, just general feeling of doom and gloom from Mark as he realizes that, you know, he's kind of screwed. These people are in a tough spot and he doesn't know where his dad is. So he helps them rebuild. Turns out it's pretty easy for them to rebuild. They're just, you know, they're ants, man. Like,
yeah, they die every like 2 weeks. So,
so then as he is helping rebuild, he basically gets told to leave and time to go home and, you know, live your own life. And he's obviously like, no, I have to help. I need to. And they're like, no, get out of here and take your purple brother with you.
Yeah.
He is going to just watch everyone die around him. And he's going to be very confused, and it's not the way he should live. He's your brother after all. Take him. And he does. So takes him home to his mom, who has just kind of mentally gotten past Nolan and started living for herself. But now she has to look after his new half-aunt, child, who luckily doesn't look like an ant in any way. It's just purple.
Yeah, just a purple, just purple dude.
just purple dude. He ages about 4 or 5 times faster than a human, but he's still just a toddler, as you know, he's probably gonna be speaking here soon. But
yeah,
Mark's on Earth again though, which after I believe it was 2 months of absence, he's like, hey, sorry. And she's weirdly understanding of it.
Yeah, she's like, oh, it's fine.
Which, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure she's cheating on him is what we're... That's what I got from it.
That would make sense.
Just like the vibe of her just being so okay with it. I had to cover for you for a long time. And she makes a phone call right after he cancels on her because he has to leave at the end. And she's just very sus. And this character, I feel like, has been made for the audience to dislike her. I feel like that's her entire purpose of her character, is to kind of be a mental roadblock for Mark, as well as kind of a strange antagonist of, hey, stop doing superhero stuff, pay attention to me in the first season. And then she becomes more accepting, and I think eventually is gonna cheat on him. Granted, people that have read the comics a bit more thoroughly probably know what's gonna happen, so I might just sound like a doomer, so apologies. But It should be interesting seeing where they take her character. But the Guardians of the Globe are kind of the central action plot of this episode. And it's just me, or is their team just absolutely massive now?
Yeah.
It was like 30 people.
Yeah, such a big roster. And even more with Duplicate, like constantly having more. Like there's just so many people. And they go up against the the lizard.
No, so well, what happens is they have this massive team, and you're like, oh, they're so stacked. But The Martians are finally invading after getting that one dude as the host. They're invading. So all of the Guardians of the globe, pretty much all of them outside of the few that wouldn't be of much use, they send them, you know, up into space to try to stop the invasion before they reach Earth.
Yeah.
Which leaves Duplicate, the one girl that Shrinking Ray or something.
Yeah.
And Rexplode are the only Guardians / heroes left on Earth. And like you were saying, the Lizard Squad goes ahead and attacks the, I think, I don't know, whatever building has the nuclear launch buttons to destroy each major city. Really a strange room to exist inside U.S. government, but I guess who am I to judge? That's not great, but the Lizard League takes over, and wasn't enough people to stop them from what we see as we lose Duplicate, sadly.
And the other one too, right?
Yeah, Shrinking Ray, and probably the most gruesome play on the, oh, why doesn't Ant-Man just crawl up Thanos' ass?
Yeah, that was expand. Savage. I so couldn't believe that.
That it was insane. One of the craziest action scenes I've ever seen, animated or not. He basically eats her, and Rexplode's doing the smug, like, oh, she's about to pop out of your neck. But dude's neck is just too thick. And I think this is the response a lot of people gave with Thanos, is like, he might just crush him. Like, he, like, you know?
Yeah.
He might not be strong enough to break through. And unfortunately, she isn't strong enough to break through. You see her just struggling once she realizes she's not going to be able to get out. And she eventually dies. And pretty insane shot
in his like esophagus. Yeah.
Yeah. Of the blood coming out of his mouth, and he just goes, yum. Unreal scene there.
Yeah.
But luckily Rexplode is able to take him out with a bomb that he ends up eating. So I guess he couldn't eat that one, and thinks he's defeated him. But then the last guy kind of shows up with a gun to his head, and I believe that's where we leave off, is the Lizard League having a gun to Rexplode's head, and the Guardians of the Globe are struggling against the Mars invasion. So it's some dark times there in that world, but I'm sure they'll be fine. And
then at the very end, nice little tag of somebody who we thought was dead. Alan the Alien coming back alive.
And also the reveal that Optimus is Viltrumite, which we did know, actually. But he kind of explains his reason, and I'm calling him Optimus because I don't know his name, and he just sounds like Optimus Prime to me. Overall, excited to have, you know, Invincible back. It feels like it's been years.
Yeah. And can't wait for three more episodes.
Yeah. I do think that was absolutely a botch. I think it's lost a lot of steam. I didn't even hear about it coming back.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, animation's hard, and I get it. And it's awesome. So it's hard to be too upset when it comes back, and it, you know, blows expectations out of the water for me time and time again with just the action scenes and the emotion that they can get from such a silly universe. What should be a silly universe on paper. Really, really well done job every single time with Mark, with Debbie, and just the emotional scenes that you don't expect, really.
Yeah.
Really impressive stuff coming out of Amazon and the Invincible team, even if it does take a long time.
Yeah. They are filming this one back to back. or they are animating like the next one, like right after this one. So hopefully it's not going to be as long of a wait between between seasons.
Yep, but you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Feels like yeah, they've been saying that, but
you know what else is filming back to back though?
Who knows? What is
The Bear? So we're getting season 3 and season 4 filming back to back. So we should be getting both of those probably this year and beginning of next year, I'm guessing.
Let's go. More Jeremy Allen White as he continues to stake his claim as the greatest actor of all time. I don't know, you know, what he needs to get that title, but he's already got it in my book. So
yeah,
maybe he just needs to fight all of the other good actors. I'm taking him in a fight one-on-one against pretty much anyone. I think Tom Hardy is going to be like Jeremy Allen White versus Tom Hardy fight to the death, I think would be an absolute barn burner, but he's going to have Leo down within minutes. It's not super worried about that.
Oh yeah.
Mark
Wahlberg, Matt Damon.
Yeah, that's no problem. He's got all the New England guys. I'm not worried about Ben Affleck. He's gone. Little concerned about like a Keanu Reeves just because of his reputation, but I think that what Jeremy Allen White gives up in height, he's just, you know, a junkyard dog, and that's sometimes all you need. So but let's get into some news. We got some news for sure. Like Scarlett Johansson being offered the lead role in an upcoming Jurassic Park movie.
All right. That's better than Chris Pratt, I guess.
I guess it's something.
Yeah.
And I can't confirm. And by I mean, can we get some toast on Twitter, which is another one of those like weird long usernames that capitalizes every word instead of just like putting spaces.
Yeah.
But they leak stuff. You know the ones. Mm-hmm. I could confirm that Henry Cavill will in fact play a Wolverine variant in Deadpool and Wolverine.
That's
fans will be pleased with his appearance. So the reason I don't worry about like saying these and it being spoilers, like, yeah, some people that might ruin that surprise. It trust me, the hit rate on these is like 10%. So generally it's just interesting to see. But we've already heard like Henry Cavill has been like talking with a role in the MCU. I don't think that role would be a Wolverine variant.
Yeah.
Also just don't see the reason of making him a Wolverine variant.
Yeah.
But if it happens,
put like fucking Danny DeVito or Daniel Radcliffe. Both of those guys would be better than like Superman. Superman showing up as Wolverine.
Yeah. Unless he's going to have like a weird nod to Superman. Like maybe he's like a Wolverine variant that wears like red and blue tights or something. That just makes no sense.
Yeah.
So I don't see the reason, but who knows, you know, maybe it'll be the greatest cameo of all time. Maybe he'll show up as the Witcher.
Yeah. Speaking of weird castings. J.K. Simmons said that in an interview that he would want Ryan Reynolds or Hugh Jackman to play Omni-Man. And I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
I think I could see Hugh Jackman.
I guess, but
I can't really see Ryan Reynolds. But I can, I don't, he's a talented actor. It's a very weird options. I feel like J.K. Simmons was born to be Omni-Man.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why he would give any other answer than just himself.
Right. But, you know.
Yeah.
Billy D. Williams, I don't know if he'd return as Lando. Pay me a lot of money and I'll sell my soul. Yeah. I guess a prequel film of Lando's in the works with Donald Glover.
Yeah. Donald Glover's writing it. I don't know. I'd be down to see a Billy Dee cameo. Disney's got enough money. They brought back Obi-Wan.
Yeah, they're going to be giving that money to someone. Might as well be Billy Dee, man.
Yeah.
A Teen Titans live action feature will be produced out of James Gunn's DC Studios.
Saw that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'll watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see what team he picks, what kind of adaptation he would make.
You probably add Blue Beetle onto it. That'd be how they get him into the DCU.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that for sure. Although that might be a bit far down the road there. I don't know.
It'll probably be like 30 by then.
Yeah, but you know, the Young Avengers for Marvel are all going to be, you know, in their 40s by the time we get that movie. So who cares, right?
Yeah.
And that's all I had from my side of the leaks and rumors.
The only other thing that I had was White Lotus Season 3 just added to the cast somebody who's in this movie that we're about to talk about right now, Fresh. She played the wife in Fresh, but they just added her to the cast list. So she'll be joining Walton Goggins from... He played Cecil in Invincible, and he's also in Justified in the Righteous Gemstones. But him and Patrick Schwarzenegger are both going to be in White Lotus Season 3. So that is hype.
Nice. Good for them getting work there. I got a few more. Dune Part 2 nears 500 million, which I'm sure it's probably passed by the time you're listening to this. Which means it's the highest grossing film of the year, obviously. We expected that to happen. And, I mean, I don't think it's going to hit the billy. From what I'm seeing, doesn't look like it. But good to know movies can still make money in the year of our Lord 2024. And then Karen Gillian confirmed Jumanji 4 is still happening. So I know... a lot of people haven't been getting very good night's sleep worrying about the fate of the Jumanji franchise. It is still alive and well and apparently on its fourth iteration. I don't know when the other two happened, but I guess they happened.
Yeah, I mean, I guess she's talking about, she's counting the original Jumanji in that. But yeah, no, I personally enjoyed the last one, so we'll see what happens.
Okay, that makes more sense. that's interesting. But we got. I'm going to transition into your review of Fresh with some layers of separation because, you know, it's starring Sebastian Stan. Sebastian Stan, he was in Avengers with Karen Gillian.
Yeah, that's wild. That's wild.
That's my one layer of separation from the segue. So
even better segue, Ty.
Yeah,
Karen Gillan stole Sebastian Stan's arm in the Marvel Cinematic Universe because Nebula took Bucky's arm.
All right, I'm gonna find another layer of separation while you're telling us about Fresh.
Okay, so. So Fresh is a thriller horror movie that's set in Portland that follows a girl who's down on her luck with dating nowadays, doesn't like using those dating apps. So she's, you know, just doing her daily thing. She meets Sebastian Stan at a grocery store and she seems to like him. She starts, you know, not necessarily dating him, but she starts talking to him. She starts starts hanging around him, and then he asks if she wants to go on a road trip, she's like, sure. And then, you know, he takes her to his house, and then, you know, you can see where this is going, but, yeah, it doesn't turn out well for her, but, yeah. So, this movie is, I enjoyed it. I thought that, Sebastian Stan was, you know, he really showed his acting chops in this. And, I thought that the lead girl was really good in it too. And, I don't know, a little bit of Hannibal Lecter vibes. If you've seen the poster, you know that you're probably in for a little bit of a cannibal storyline. But no, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it's a and anybody that doesn't know, this is a Oregon-based podcast. So yeah. Getting anything set in Oregon's always a big pop. They go to Lake Oswego. You know, there's some big Oregon drops, so yeah. for all the Oregon heads out there, it's an important watch for the culture. But yeah, I think this really got to show what Sebastian Stan is capable of, and I think what he's capable of is being a you know, charismatic Ted Bundy type to a T.
Yeah,
he's very, very good at it, and he gets to show that off in this, and really, really well done. From, you know, just it's a very simple, it's a shorter movie, it's just, you know, simple cannibal stuff.
Yeah, no, the directing was really good, the lighting I thought was really good, and how it like it played with different lighting for different scenarios. But also probably one of my favorite line readings of any movie was Sebastian Stan going like, he's like, I'm just gonna tell you, we're going to Cottage Grove. that was so funny. I absolutely died laughing. Just knowing that there's absolutely nothing in Cottage Grove, and this man, he's like, I've always wanted to go. Like, so yeah, that is just so funny.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, like, this movie has a 30-minute intro, which gotta love the balls on any director that puts an intro 30 minutes into the movie after we've already been established, and forget that you're watching a movie that hasn't had an intro. So both of those things I loved about this.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It very much like you're immersed in the movie, and then it's like, oh wow, okay, I guess it's starting now. That was fun.
No, yeah.
Here's another layer of separation for you. I got lost it for a second. Brett Dyer played Chad in this movie. He was also in Jane the Virgin with Gina Rodriguez, who was in Annihilation with Oscar Isaac, who's also, I mean, Tessa Thompson was also in it. Yeah, Marvel, Sebastian Stan. We got there again. It all goes back to Endgame. I don't know if you, you've played that like game where you have to like say what is it called? It's like something. Anyways, you have to, Cinema Two Nerdle. Yeah, that one. And Endgame is always just the biggest cheat code because just so many people have been in Endgame.
Yeah.
So if you just have two movies, most likely there is an overlap with Endgame if it was made in the last 20 years. So
yeah,
shout out Endgame. as we wrap up the show here, we actually got a bit of a shorter one. We always talk about it being a bit of a shorter one, and then we go on some long tangent about something. But
yeah,
I think we're actually gonna get out of here.
Do you want to go on a long tangent about Vice, Ty?
Oh yeah, I almost forgot. No, how could you forget? It won't be a long tangent. It won't be a long tangent because, like, I don't need to go off about, you know, political stuff that happened 25 years ago. But I watched Vice, which came out in 2018 with Christian Bale, who's definitely someone that would probably give Jeremy Allen White a run for his money if it's a fight to the death for the best actor award.
Yeah.
I think Christian Bale would be someone that I'd be afraid to fight to the death. He just has that general vibe of he's going to do anything. He's going to go for your eyes. He's going to go for your neck. He's going to push on like your breathing tube like if yeah. he gets you in close. I would be worried about Christian Bale. But someone I would be less worried about in that scenario would be Steve Carell, who's also in this movie, along with Tyler Perry, Sam Rockwell, and Lily Rabe and Jesse Plemons. It's an interesting cast, and it's a very strong cast for something that is very controversial, the life of Dick Cheney in his rise to power in the vice presidency and how a vice president was able to get that much power and basically documents his whole life and shows how he got to where he was always destined to be, I guess, inside the Republican Party. And it's a really, really interesting watch if you are any bit interested in politics, especially politics in the early 2000s with the Bush administration and all of the weird going on with that. I went into it completely blind on a recommendation, and I thought it was like Vice, like Miami Vice. So when I get like a smash cut from a like a DUI scene to, oh, it's just like 9/11 happening now, it was very jarring, but it's a super enjoyable watch. There's like a narrator in it that has like narrative reason to be narrating. Really, really interesting. I definitely recommend giving it a watch if you want to see Christian Bale, you know, at his chunkiest, really just doing his full Dick Cheney.
Oh, I'll check that out.
Yeah, and I guess it's kind of in a similar vein of W, which is like the Josh Brolin as George Bush thing, which I've been meaning to watch.
Oh, okay.
But from what I've heard, the Vice is better than W. But yeah, shout out. It's described as a American epic, biographical political satire, black comedy.
The Vices,
and yeah, directed by Adam McKay, who of course did Step Brothers, Anchorman, Talladega Nights. And the other guys. Alan, don't forget. Don't Look Up and The Big Short. So now that we've gone through Adam McKay's entire filmography, I feel like we could leave here happy.
Yeah, me too. Feel satisfied for this week.
All right. Well, I appreciate everyone for listening along. And we'll be back next week with more Invincible for sure. As well as the results for Rot or Tot, if any of them have come out by then. But we'll also be going through all of the April movies. So if you want a preview of all of the movies coming out in April, make sure to check into next week's show, as well as check out any of the YouTube videos that got posted over the last couple weeks. Big Oscar push. We got reviews for all of the Best Picture noms on their separate videos, so make sure you check those out. Trent did a great job documenting both our reviews and what we thought, as well as our initial reactions. So make sure to check that out, and thank you again for listening.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll-